Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, December 1st, first day of December, and what a better way to celebrate the first day of December than to chat with Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda, as we do on Sundays. We're going to get into a lot of stuff with Bill, Iran, some second thoughts. A lot of people are talking about this new Iran deal, and frankly, a lot of people are having second thoughts about it, and many of them are Democrats. So we'll talk to Bill about that today. Obamacare, the website apparently running, but maybe not running so well. Great editorial in the Wall Street Journal talking about the problems with Obamacare. It's not so much the website as it is Obamacare itself, the fact that it's not as affordable as it was presented to be. So we'll get into all of that with Bill. Afghanistan in the news as well. There's an American citizen, and I find this absolutely appalling. There's an American citizen, 85-year-old citizen, who is being detained in North Korea. I find that appalling. But he's not the only one. There's also an American citizen detained in Iran. There's also an American citizen detained in Cuba. So we'll talk to Bill a little bit about that. I just find that appalling that U.S. citizens would be imprisoned like that, especially this 85-year-old man being detained in North Korea because of war crimes. Give me a break. We'll get into that with Bill this morning. My book, Cubanos in Wisconsin, you can get yourself a copy of the book at the Amazon. It's a great Christmas present as you're putting together your gifts for Christmas. In fact, you can order the book online at Amazon, or you can go to our website, Cubanos in Wisconsin, and get yourself a copy of the book. A lot of you have done that, and you've asked us to dedicate the book, which, of course, we'd be more than happy to do. Dedicate it for a family member, dedicate it for a friend. Just give us the information, and we'll be more than happy to do it for you. We're going to take a break, and we will be back with Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda right after this. Let's say happy December 1st to our friend Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda. How are you, Bill?
I'm just fine, Silvio. I'm actually in Virginia and speaking to you from beautiful Virginia gorgeous day here. Amazing. It's already December 1st, isn't it? It's
It really is.
Yes, I just was so looking forward to the launch of Obamacare, and here it is, and I just feel I want to savor the moment.
That's right. Well, we're going to get into Obamacare in a minute. Apparently, it supposedly went up yesterday, but we're not sure exactly how well it's working just yet. But, Bill, you know, speaking of getting things done or making things happen, you know, Obamacare has been such an embarrassment. But on this day in history, I went back to 1931. This is the day that Ford Motor Company created the assembly line, one of the great chapters of American capitalism. And it's amazing how something like the assembly line can be put together and done, but Obamacare cannot be, you know, at least the website cannot be done. I mean, it's quite a contrast, isn't it, Bill?
Well, the Obamacare website is a disgrace. It has not been investigated the way it should have been investigated. I mean, we have already running in this country huge websites. Even, I mean, look at Amazon. Which handle thousands of titles and do it well. And here we spent how many tens of millions of dollars for a website that didn't work, and nobody wants to ask any questions. How did this company that designed the website get the contract? Apparently they have a history of failure. But mm-hmm. you can be sure money was exchanged and you know, somebody knew somebody. But there just aren't enough questions being asked. And, of course, the press, as usual when it comes to Obama, just averts its eyes and has not done the job. But, you know, as I've said on Urgent Agenda, the issue with Obamacare is not the website. That will eventually be fixed to some degree. The problem with Obamacare is Obamacare. And as people find out what it really is, which is a scheme, and already we are seeing so many reports of doctors opting out of the best hospitals, not being included in health plans where people will get some health care, but not on the level that they really expected. And, you know, it's the old story of socialized medicine. It's a kind of equal mediocrity.
Right. And in fact, I mentioned there's a great editorial in the Wall Street Journal either yesterday or today talking about Obamacare and the fact that it's not affordable. This is not an affordable program, and more people are finding it out. Now, if you're getting it for free, as many people will who are being subsidized, then I guess it doesn't matter. But the majority of the people will have to pay for it, and they're going to find out it's nothing affordable, Bill. This is really – I think this is going to become an even worse problem for the administration. Once once the website is fixed, and I agree with you, it should be fixed at some point, I think when people start going in there and they actually start shopping, this is going to become a real problem, particularly for people who lost their policies who are now being forced to buy something more expensive, Bill, that includes options they don't need and they don't really want.
That's right. It's a very politicized plan. Apparently, all plans have to include abortion coverage and birth control coverage, which for people, you know, over 50 or 60 is not necessarily something they want. Sandra Fluke has been out there beating the drums for birth control coverage. excuse me. You see the political influences of the groups that run the Democratic Party, but there are so many anecdotes out there of young. It was a story of a young man who has hearing difficulty, he's covered for abortion and birth control, but not for hearing aids. I mean, that's just crazy. That's just crazy. But it's what the political forces in the Democratic Party want, and I think that situation is actually getting worse as Obama gets into his second term. What is absolutely frightening is he's gone completely out of control. I mean, what we're getting now is the real Obama, which is a left-wing president. And I think you're right. I think it's going to be a big issue. Whether the Republicans can exploit it or not is up to the Republicans. They will. This is an opportunity that a party very rarely receives. But the Republican Party, as you know, we've discussed this before, the Republican Party works hard at losing elections. And they have now really got to concentrate. They've got to forget about 2016 for a while. Concentrate on winning the midterms next year, which means good candidates. You cannot do it with poor candidates.
Right. Interesting about that, Bill, because I think that will be a real problem because you can be in – I mean Obamacare, the programs in Obamacare will be a huge problem because, you know, you can be in favor of abortion and still believe that people should pay for their own abortion. You can be in favor of birth control and still believe that, you know, women should buy their own birth control. I mean, I personally don't care if a woman uses the birth control pill, but don't ask me to pay for it. The same with the abortion. And I think there are many, many young people who are going to have problems with this idea that they are paying for stuff that they don't need, they don't use. If you're 25 years old and you're single, why should you pay for maternity, for example? So I just think these are issues that are under the surface because of the Obamacare website problem. But once they fix those technical problems and this stuff comes out, I think the Obama political problems will become even worse. And I think more and more Democrats, Bill, as you've been reporting on Urgent Agenda, more and more Democrats are going to start running, if they're not running already, especially in the last couple of days.
Well, I think that's absolutely correct. They are running. It will be interesting to see how the potential Democratic presidential candidates handle this. Of course, Hillary Clinton being the only one who is really in a position to win in 2016. because there will be a certain number of people who are helped by it. I mean, as you said, there are people who get subsidies, and they are part of the Democratic constituency, but tens of millions of other Americans are going to be hurt by this. And it is essentially a wealth transfer program. It will not do the job for which it was presumably intended, which was to fill the coverage gap, where a certain number of Americans did not have full health care coverage or did not have formal health care coverage. Everybody was always covered in the sense that you could get care at any hospital. I mean, they have to give it to you. But I just feel that people are going to wind up with less, pay more, have to take funds out of things that were planned for other family expenses, and they have a right to be angry. But whether there will be enough of them to overcome the voters who will get subsidies, I don't know. And again, this is something that has to be exploited politically by the opposition party, which has to know what it's doing. So
we're in the
2014 campaign right now.
Right, and Obamacare is the central issue. One point I wanted to make, Bill. You know, I keep hearing from liberals that they wanted a single payer, that Obamacare was never really their first choice, that they really wanted a single payer. In fact, a couple of liberal friends have been emailing me saying how disappointed they are that President Obama did not do a single payer. But as I've told them, and I like to get your reaction this morning, I'm not sure that a single payer would have run any more smoothly than Obamacare. In other words, the idea of the federal government doing health care, I think it would have been as much of a problem whether it's a single payer or whether it's the current Obamacare. I just don't believe the federal government is equipped to get into something as complicated and complex as health care bill.
Well, actually, the federal government, as you know, is involved in Medicare, but Medicare is a program for people over 65. So it is not; it does not cover the entire nation. It covers actually only a fraction of the nation. And Medicare runs pretty well, although everybody finds that they need some type of supplementary insurance. What people who want single payer don't realize is this: this is a country of 318 million people. It's not a small European country like Sweden, and that the size does matter in these things. As you said, the complexity is great. If you want single payer for the entire country, in effect, a Medicare for the entire country, it is vastly more complicated than what we have now. In addition, if you have single payer, you eliminate the very thing that generally creates excellence, and that is competition. There is no competition anymore, and you get what you're given. And Sarah Palin was ridiculed for saying that Obamacare had death panels, but last week Mark Halperin, who is a liberal Democrat and a well-known political author, conceded as much. He said, of course there are death panels in there. They don't call them death panels, of course. They're called standard of care committees or whatever, but they will decide on the health care you get. I don't want one institution in this country making those decisions, especially when it's located in Washington, because the danger of corruption is so enormous. You see this in Britain, where people are left to die if they don't fall inside that standard of care guideline. And that's not something I want for this country. The current system does have its problems. Of course, we know that. And there was an argument that insurance companies really don't add to health care. They add to the expense of health care. That's an argument, too. But one thing you do get with the current system is you do get competition. And plans are improved because insurance companies want your business. And that is the part that single payer never includes. I'm frightened of single payer. I think that is the direction we're heading in.
Well, and that may very well be what they want to – you're right. That may very well be what they want to accomplish. But I'm not sure that – I think after the experience with Obamacare bill, I think citizens are going to be – at least many citizens, we hope a majority, will be very concerned about, you know, about the government taking on these kinds of responsibilities that it was never really designed to do. I mean, I think that there was an opportunity to fix – the healthcare problem, pre-existing conditions is an issue. People who lose their insurance because they lose their jobs, and people who, of course, under the poverty line who don't have insurance. But you could have addressed those three very serious problems without having to mess it up for the other 80 or 85% who were pretty happy with what they had, Bill.
Yes, that's exactly right. This was a case where a hammer was used to punch in a very small nail. There were indeed problems, especially the pre-existing condition problem, where a person with a pre-existing condition couldn't get health care, which is when they needed it. That could be taken care of. I mean, you could have a supplementary insurance program run by the government for, you know, that would help to subsidize those situations. You could have people losing portability of health care, where if you lose your job, it goes with you. Well, they began with something called the COBRA program, which wasn't very good. But that also, these things can all be taken care of. But that, sadly, they were dishonest about it. There's a terrible level of dishonesty in this administration. And their objective was to rewrite the entire health care system and just not tell us about it. And, of course, the press went right along with it. And did not report what was actually going on accurately, which has become, I think, a complete national scandal. And this is what we're stuck with. And what is really disturbing here is the number of physicians who say they're going to either leave medicine or retire early. And these are often people in specialties that are very much in demand. We're going to have a doctor shortage in America. At a time when we should have a doctor surplus.
You know, Bill, I had experience when I lived in Mexico for 4 years. I had experience with a socialized medicine country. In Mexico, they have, you know, socialized medicine, sort of like a single-payer kind of system like they do in Canada, but they also allow a private healthcare system to, you know, to operate on the side. And anybody who has a chance to get into the private sector system will do so. In fact, many unions will negotiate a private sector insurance for their workers. So what very often happens is, if you have a chance to go to the private doctor, you go to the private doctor. But, you know, if you have no money, then you stand in line and you wait at these public hospitals. And I fear that we may be heading in that direction. And what a tragedy that is for a great country like the United States, that just a few years ago we didn't have a problem like that, but we seem to be heading in that direction, Bill. And I'm just amazed.
Oh yes. Well, we have probably the most incompetent president in recent memory, and he didn't understand anything about anything. And of course, the people writing the bills in Congress were staff members of Democratic committees in Congress, and Nancy Pelosi, who's worth about $30 million. They're living in a world of their own, and they've created a catastrophe. But, you know, right. What happens is, to use the phrase coined by Daniel Patrick Moynihan, what happens eventually is you get deviancy down, and you get a situation where people get used to the lower standard. And I'm afraid that's what's going to happen. You know, as people, as the decades move on, there won't be people around to remember how good American health care was. And you see, today, and there are areas of the country that are very, very poorly served. And ironically, one of the things that could have actually improved the healthcare system, which was tort reform, to avoid the terrible, terrible prices that doctors have to pay for malpractice insurance, which drives the cost of healthcare up and drives them, in many cases, out of whole areas of the country. There are areas of the South that don't have obstetricians because of malpractice cases. That could have been addressed, and they refused to address it. Why? Because the trial bar is very powerful in the Democratic Party. This is what many people don't realize about Obamacare is it's the first major social program in American history to be passed with no support from the opposition party. There was not one Republican vote for it, and that's a scandal. They should have insisted on a bipartisan approach. But when Obama came to power, they thought, this is a new age. We have the power now. Let's use it. And they did. Social Security had some bipartisan support. Medicare had some bipartisan support. Nothing for this.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And that is the opportunity for the Republicans, as we were saying before. And we'll see if they can take it. They have time. We'll see if they can take that opportunity. But I can see a real train wreck for the Democrats, to use the words of Senator Baucus, I think, you know, for the Democrats in November, if this thing doesn't get fixed, Bill. But let me switch to a couple of foreign policy issues here, Bill, this morning. I want to begin with this outrage of an American citizen being held in North Korea. The fellow is 85 years old, and he was literally taken out of the plane by the North Koreans because of allegations that he was involved in war crimes in a war that ended 60 years ago. I think this is an outrage, and I'll go further. This is what happens when you have a president that nobody fears or respects. This is what happens. You get an American citizen detained in North Korea. You have a pastor, another U.S. citizen, detained in Iran. And then you have Dr. Gross detained in Cuba. I mean, this is what happens. I believe this is what happens when your enemies don't respect you, Bill.
Well, it also happens when the president of the United States doesn't regard them as enemies. I mean, you have a secretary of state now who has a very bad history. We learned this morning that the U.S. has opened up a back channel with Hezbollah, that obviously we are throwing our allies in the Mideast under the bus. You're quite right about North Korea. A man who was a veteran of the Korean War, who is now 85, went back to Korea as a tourist. And as he was leaving the country, he was taken off the plane, forced to make statements in a kind of broken English, which means they were written obviously by somebody else, and he's being held there. And the response of the administration is to ask for his release, but in a very mild way, and no repercussions, no nothing. I mean, it's interesting also, we have hostages, as you mentioned, in Iran, and we now learn that an Iranian nuclear scientist was released from Western custody in April as part of this back-channel negotiation, but that during the nuclear negotiation, the fate of Americans being held in Iran was never even brought up. The contempt for American citizens so that Obama and Kerry can get their piece of paper is amazing. I mean, we could have come out with a much better deal. We could have gotten people released. It wasn't done. And you mentioned Cuba, of course, obviously the same thing. In fact, there are stories that now Obama's next move internationally will be to restore relations with Cuba. Well, if Cuba wants that, how about a little cooperation? And you're quite right. Nobody takes Obama seriously internationally. He is a goofball. He is a leftist. He's not a liberal. His true feelings are coming out. Sadly, those feelings are also shared by the very people who are his main power base, which is elements of the American press and American colleges and universities, where this kind of thing is quite popular. I mean, after all, who needs allies when you can pacify your enemies and appease them? The deal with Iran is, as you said, very, very problematical. And now we find, interestingly enough, the Iranians, by the way, are excellent negotiators. They have a history of being excellent negotiators. Now they're beginning to make nice to Saudi Arabia, which is an American ally, which is furious with us over the concessions to Iran. So what does Iran do? It turns around and is starting to a diplomatic campaign, a charm offensive in Saudi Arabia. They now realize they can pull Saudi Arabia away from the United States and into their orbit. This is just, it's a no-win for America, a win for Iran. I don't think Obama is in any way concerned about that. I think he is a very, very pro-Muslim in his attitudes, and I think he sees Iran as a very noble future major force in the Middle East, more important than the United States. As far as our other allies are concerned, Israel, Jordan, they've been thrown under the bus. I mean, there'll be some military aid to Israel, which is the way they pay off the Israelis. But realistically, this is Obama's real policy. Pacify our enemies.
That's right. Well, let me bring up a couple of points about, I want to get your reaction, a couple of points here about this Iran deal, Bill. The first one is this idea, and you know, the idea that, you know, we got to get peace at any price, you know, that somehow, you know, we got to get a deal because a deal is better than nothing. We got to get a deal, you know, the old Chamberlain from the 1930s, you know, peace is at hand type of approach. And I find that very troubling, that we just got to do a deal because, you know, we want to do a deal. Now, the other problem for President Obama is Democrats. There's a lot of Democrats in the Senate, your own Senator Schumer there in New York, who's not very happy with this deal. And I find that could be another problem for him. With Democrats, particularly with Obamacare, Democrats begin to distance themselves more from President Obama, and this deal may be another reason for many Democrats to go, maybe walk away a little bit further from their president, Bill.
Well, yes, except for one thing, and that is that the administration is touting a poll that was taken showing that the deal is very popular among Americans. And of course, his friends in the press, especially at places like CNN, are touting this poll, which shows that that by 2-1, Americans favor the deal with Iran, except when you look at the details of the poll. The 2-1 turns out to be 44% in favor, 22% against, and a large chunk of Americans don't know. If you add the don't knows and the people opposed together, that's a majority of the country. But they're going to tout this as support for the agreement. And there are people who still in America will support Obama no matter what he does. I mean, he is their guy. I mean, he's their champion. I think that the deal with Iran, it's a bad deal, but the way it's going to be sold down the line is not as a peace deal, but as an economic deal. They're already champing at the bit in a number of countries to start trading with Iran again. We will start trading with Iran again. There are reports, I cannot confirm them, that there's going to be a joint Iran-U.S. Chamber of Commerce within a month. And what Obama is going to say, and it's the same old story, he's going to say, this is good for American jobs. The key word will be jobs. This will create jobs. And when people hear that in a weak economy, they are going to be influenced by it. And this is what I fear, is that it's going to be a sellout, and the people who warn about the sellout are going to be portrayed as warmongers and people who are against the American worker. I see that coming because it's the way this crowd plays the game.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how many jobs a deal. I mean, even if things worked out well with Iran, not exactly sure how many jobs we're going to get out of this because the Europeans are way ahead of us in that line. But, hopefully, we hope for the best, but I'm not very optimistic about this deal.
Now,
let me ask you about Syria. What are you hearing about Syria? Apparently, they were supposed to destroy their chemical weapons. What's the latest on that, Bill? I'm a little confused.
Well, and for good reason. We have asked a number of countries to help us destroy the Syrian chemical weapons, and we've got a number of refusals. So apparently, the latest is that the United States Navy will do it at sea, that there are ways of doing it in the ocean that are harmless, and that we will do it. Key question is, how much in the way of WMD, weapons of mass destruction, do the Syrians really have? That's the big mystery here. They have apparently turned over some chemical weapons. Well, of course they're going to do that. They made an agreement. They have to turn over something. But what do they have in reserve that we don't know about? And remember, they are a very close ally of Iran. And apparently there's also, by the way, a new report that the real reason we held off attacking Syria was a last-minute plea from Iran that they could settle this thing with their Syrian clients. Obama is playing with fire. He's playing with some of the world's worst dictatorships and treating them almost as friends. He's either a very naive man or a very evil man. I don't know which. But I am very concerned about what Syria has that it has not declared and that UN inspectors have not found. It's very easy to hide chemical weapons. And,
right.
Of course, as you know, there is a body of belief, and it's a body of belief that is held by informed people, that Syria received some of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction before the Iraq War and may have many of them in reserve. I'm certainly not pleased with the Syrian situation. I want to know the full truth. I don't think we're getting it.
And what I don't understand, though, Bill, is why we're not getting it. I mean, why aren't we? It's the same with North Korea, the same with Iran, now with Syria. It just seems like we're not screaming enough. I mean, in these negotiations, we're not expecting the other side to do more. It seems like we're the ones making concessions, and the other side is pushing us. That's the feeling I get, fair or unfair, but that's the feeling I get, that we're being pushed around, or at least it comes across that way, Bill.
Well, I think you're right. We are being pushed around, but I don't think Obama cares. I think Obama is one of those leftists who believes that we are the problem, that if we would just stay out of these things, that everything would be okay, that we're overly aggressive, overly dependent on military might, which is another big issue that's going to come up, and that is the cutting of our military to the bone. I think that he feels that that we have been overly generous to Israel, and that Israel. I heard Elliot Abrams speak a few weeks ago, who's a Reagan aide on the Middle East. He was saying that, from what he knows of Obama, Obama does not consider Israel an ally of the United States, but considers it a problem, which is the George Soros attitude, that it's a problem. And I think Obama considers Britain a problem. I think he considers France a problem. I think he considers Canada a problem. I think he considers our allies to be problems and our enemies to be friends we just haven't made yet. And I think that is his view, you know, and that is his view, and I certainly think that's John Kerry's view. I mean, this is a man, John Kerry, who has been wrong on every foreign policy issue of our time. This is a man who not only betrayed his comrades in Vietnam, he then later went to the Soviet Union in the 80s, and he came back saying, they are no threat to us, because when I went to Moscow, half the lights were out at the airport. Well, he wasn't taken to the nuclear missile submarines or to the rocket bases, and it was just goofball comments like that, and you really wonder what goes on in John Kerry's mind, if anything.
That's right. Well, there's a couple of other foreign policy challenges going on, Bill. One is Afghanistan. You know, we're supposed to be making this deal with them to keep troops. Apparently, they don't want to do it now. They're pulling out. The president of Afghanistan is acting like a first-rate clown. Now, I know he's in a very difficult situation, and you got to cut him a little slack because he's in a very difficult situation there in Afghanistan. So you've got to cut him a little nationalistic slack. He's got to say a few things that maybe we don't want to hear. But at the end of the day, he's walking away from a security deal that I think we need to make. But the other issue with Afghanistan, Bill, is that the American public is getting really, really sick and tired of this president of Afghanistan. And there's probably a viewpoint that says, let's just get the heck out and let them worry about their country, and that may not be in our interest, but that may be where we end up because of the behavior of this president of Afghanistan, Bill.
Well, Karzai is, he's a very difficult man, and one of the stories in the press today pointed out that while he criticizes Americans that there's a mistake in an attack, and there have been a drone attack where Afghan civilians are killed, and I can understand that criticism, but he will not criticize the Taliban, and which attacks all the time. And, of course, it is that double standard. I also think that Obama, our president, would not be displeased if the whole security pact with Afghanistan collapsed and we had to pull all of our troops out. I don't think that would bother him. I think that, in fact, if anything, it may fit into his game plan. I trust Obama so little, and I trust his integrity so little, that I think he may be... I wouldn't say provoking Karzai, because Karzai is a pretty bad piece of work to begin with. But he may not do very much to rescue the security pact that we've negotiated with Afghanistan, because he may not be very enthusiastic to begin with.
Right. You kind of go back, Bill, to what they used to say about Afghanistan versus Iraq. And looking back at it now, they would say Afghanistan, that's the place we have to be. Iraq is not the place. But looking back at it now, they were just playing politics because they're not doing it. I mean, the truth is they're not serious. They were not serious about Iraq, and they're not serious about Afghanistan right now either, Bill.
That's right. What we're getting is a lot of double talk from the White House. Look, is Iraq a wonderfully friendly country? No, it is not. But had we left a security presence in Iraq, there could have at least been some stability, which we don't have now. We have to remember that when the Korean War ended in 1953 with an armistice, we maintained forces in Korea and maintained them through very bad periods of South Korean history, the Syngman Rhee regime, which was a dictatorial regime, other regimes that we didn't particularly like, but we understood where our interests lay. And we still have, I believe, as many as 37,000, maybe it's a little less now, troops in Korea, years and years, decades, 60 years or so, 60 years, I believe, after the end of the Korean War. And that has been a very good investment for us. It really has. It has maintained the stability of the peninsula, which is a critical peninsula in the world, and it has added to the protection of our ally, Japan. People say, well, why should we have to do it and spend our money on it? Well, you know, those troops would be somewhere. So they would be in the United States. We have to pay for them anyway. And they're deployed in an area where they do a great deal of good in terms of maintaining stability. I just don't think Obama sees it that way.
Right. I mean, you definitely, those troops in South Korea kept peace in that region. There's no question about that. And I'm sure that it was probably just as difficult for President Eisenhower to get that security deal as this one is now. Maybe not as hard, but anyway, these things are never easy, keeping troops in another country, but sometimes you got to do it. Let me move to another foreign policy issue here, Bill, and that's China. All of a sudden, they're flexing a little muscle there with these flights and so on. What do you make of that? Is there anything serious there?
I think there is. There could be a clash with China because the Chinese may be misreading the United States, or maybe reading it accurately, that we are a country that really does not stand up for the things that we believe in and does not stand up for our allies. There were weeks there when China was making claims to these islands in the Pacific. There were weeks there when we were basically almost proclaiming a kind of neutrality. Finally, we did say, which was absolutely required for the United States to say, that we side with Japan, our ally in this. Now the Chinese are trying to control the airspace over these disputed islands. We are, quote, protesting, and we are sending our military flights over the islands to challenge the Chinese. What we will do in the long run, I don't know. Again, I mean, this is a president who nobody fears. And when you have a president who nobody fears, that is a very, very strong danger to the peace, because it's miscalculation that starts many wars. And the Chinese may simply push too far.
That's right. Well, you know, before we look at some of the issues of next week, Bill, there was a very interesting television program. I think it's going to air tonight again on Fox, and it's about the space program. And, Bill, I could not believe this. I had to read it twice, that the last man on the moon was December 1972. That is 41 years ago, the last time we had a man on the moon. I don't know, as I remember back then, you know, watching Apollo 18, if anybody had said to me in December 1972 that we would not be back to the moon, somehow I would have never believed it. I would have said, no way that's going to happen. But it's been 41 years, and that is remarkable to me that we have literally given up on the space program. It has so many benefits, if as well as psychological benefits for the country, about feeling good about our country. What do you make of that? 41 years without a space program. Well, not without a space program, but without a moon program.
Well, I think it's sad, it wasn't. Can it be all attributed to Obama? The space program lost a certain amount of glamour. It became routine, and you know, we would send shuttle flights up, and nobody would even notice because it had become such a routine part of our lives. But under Obama, there has been a substantial cut in the program. We do not currently have a rocket capable of putting men into space. I mean, we depend on the Russians for that, which, again, is just the kind of mentality you expect from somebody like Obama. You know, so what? So we depend on the Russians. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is we don't control it, and that we need Russian rockets to get our people to the International Space Station, which is up there. We do have some new things coming online, I believe, in the late teens of this century. But there's no dream anymore. We were motivated by such a sense of adventure, and that's important. You know, President Kennedy said, we choose to go to the moon, and he wanted to put a man on the moon in the 1960s and return him safely, and that's exactly what we did. And that sense of adventure is important to a great nation. It's a sense of spirit.
That's right.
And Obama, again, it's something Obama doesn't believe in. Remember that what he told the head of NASA, his new head of NASA, when he was appointed, that his main program, his main objective would be Muslim outreach. I mean, that's crazy. That's just crazy stuff. But I do not think the American people understand. Well, maybe they're beginning to understand how bad this administration really is.
Yeah. In fact, there was an article, you wrote something about this, about Urgent, over at Urgent Agenda, I think it was at the Washington Times, you know, talking about how bad things are really getting. Well, let's take a look at next week, Bill. Week after Thanksgiving, things sort of get back to normal here for the next couple of weeks. What are some of the issues that you think you'll be following next week?
Well, certainly the Obamacare situation. As you know, yesterday was the deadline for them to repair the website, and we're going to get an announcement from Washington today as to how well the repair went. Well, of course, it's all going to be sugar-coated, but apparently the website is still problematical, but better than it was before. But what I want to know is this week is, for those people who got on, were they happy with what they saw? The problem, as we say, with Obamacare is Obamacare. It isn't the website. The website will be fixed. It's Obamacare itself. We'll be following that issue, and in particular, the response of moderate Democrats. As you pointed out before, many of them have been very, very critical, and they want nothing to do with it because they feel their own careers are at stake. The second thing we'll be dealing with, again, is this remarkable situation with Iran, where we have signed or agreed to a bad agreement. The Iranians now say it isn't binding. They don't agree with the American interpretation of the agreement, but there will be with Iran. Remember, we've made a commitment that within 6 months there will be a final agreement with Iran on its nuclear program. I heard things this week that were so frightening that as part of that agreement we are willing to put in a sunshine clause, which means the agreement would lapse at a certain point automatically. This is madness, and it is, I think, something that we have to follow every day. The Iranians are not going to stand still during these 6 months. They're going to be moving. They're going to be on the move, and I think we are going to be the loser. The third thing,
but Bill, one quick question. Yeah. I wanted to just to bring up a quick point about the Iran deal. The idea, again, that the president of the United States would be humiliated like that, that you make a deal and then the Iranians say, well, it's really not binding. It's almost as if they're saying, you know, we won, and we're going to stick it in your face. I mean, that's what I read out of it.
And that's exactly what they're doing. And I think they do feel they won, and I think they feel that they're going to win in the future and that America is a nation in rapid decline, intentionally, a decline brought about by a president who I think is getting increasingly reckless by the day in his second term. We're seeing the real Obama. One of the stories we're going to be covering is the tremendous increase in the number of federal regulations that are being published. And, in fact, Obama said that's what he was going to do. He was going to do as much as he could by executive order. And this country can be tied in knots by executive orders. So that's another thing we'll be covering. And, of course, remember, in 31 days, we will be into 2014, and the 2014 campaigns have already begun. But I will say again, no party has ever had an opportunity like this. If the Republican Party blows this, it doesn't deserve to be a political party.
I think somebody said they should take their license away if they blow this one, you know?
Well, exactly, I agree.
Yeah, but a couple of things I wanted to mention about these issues you'll be looking at next week. One of the big questions I have, Bill, about the Obamacare website is that it may work in the front end, in the sense that people can go in and shop or even put their name down or whatever, sign in. But it's still not working in the back end, and this is one of the most incredible questions to me, is how that can be, that there's the information is still very bad going to the insurance companies. There is still no way to actually pay for this. I don't know of anybody who has actually written a check or has a way of actually paying for whatever program they've selected. I mean, it is really incredible, the technical incompetence of the people who put this thing together. And the other thing I wanted to bring up, tying into what you mentioned about 2014, we're only about 30 or 45 days away, Bill, from another budget crisis.
Yes,
because remember,
right,
that's going to happen in January and February, and that's going to tie up Washington. Hopefully the Republicans won't go for the shutdown craziness, but they do have an opportunity with the debt ceiling and some of the other spending issues. Hopefully they can tighten that up a little bit more, Bill.
Well, yes, I hope so. No, I don't think they're going to go for a government closing, but I do think that one of the things you're going to see coming out of this budget negotiation is a sharper reduction in defense spending, which is really reaching frightening levels. The chief naval operations was saying last month, well, you know, aircraft carriers are very expensive. I think that yeah, they're expensive. They're also very important. And you know, this will go hand in hand with our diplomacy. A weakening America and an America in decline, an intentional decline, brought about by a leftist president. So every day counts now. You know, we still have 3 more years of Obama, and the damage that can be done could be immense, and it could be permanent damage. Once you start sending people checks, like the people getting subsidies, they always want those checks. And you basically have bought a vote. And I think this country's future is in substantial jeopardy right now.
Right. One quick point I wanted to make with Thanksgiving behind us now, a couple of days. What are you hearing about the economic impact of Black Friday? I heard initially that sales were up, but then I heard that they were down. I mean, maybe it's too early to tell, but have you heard anything?
No, the initial reports were pretty good, but we won't know for a while. I mean, they have to tabulate these things, and that's just Black Friday. You're talking about the entire Christmas buying season, and we really won't know until early next year how well this went. I think people are being very selective. You go to malls, as we do, like everybody does, and do some shopping. There are stores that are absolutely filled. You can't get into the Apple store where we live. I mean, it's just jammed.
Mm-hmm.
Yet other stores are relatively empty. And you get the feeling that the population has now become very, very selective in what it buys and is waiting for bargains. They'll get the bargains. They've become educated consumers by necessity.
You know, Bill, I think it speaks volumes about the country that young people will line up for hours to get into the Apple store. I mean, I have 3 sons, and they're crazy about all that stuff. But yet, they won't go into the Obamacare website. And, you know, maybe these young people are smarter than we think, you know?
Well, I can't imagine why any young person would want Obamacare. I mean, why do it when you eliminate the prohibition on pre-existing conditions? Get into a situation where a young person will say, look, I'll take my chances. If something happens, I can just sign up that day, and they can. I was listening last week on a radio program to somebody who represented an insurance company trying to encourage young people to sign up, and the arguments she gave were so weak. I mean, she says, well, you know, if you sign up for insurance now, even if you don't need it, you start a relationship with a doctor. Hey, at $12,000 a year, I can have a relationship with many doctors on my own without signing up for an insurance plan. I mean, I think many young people are going to say, look, if I want a doctor, I'll go to a doctor. I'll pay for it out of my own money to get my two checkups a year or whatever I need. I'll have my relationship. It'll cost me vastly less than an insurance policy, which includes birth control, you know. I think young people are smart, and they're going to see this as a fraud.
I think that, you know, being the father of 3 sons in that 20-something, the early 20-something age, they're interested in a lot of relationships at that age. I don't think having a relationship with their doctor is one of the relationships that is very high on their priority. Now, if they have an illness or a problem, obviously that's different. But if they're healthy, which is 90% of them, maybe more, they're interested in relationships. But getting to know a doctor is not among them. If the doctor is real pretty, maybe that's a difference. But
yes. Well, this whole Obamacare thing was so poorly designed. It didn't reflect human nature, and that's what good political leaders do. They understand their people.
Let me ask you one last question. I don't know if you've read this book or not. I have not read it, but it's out there, and it's number one. Charles Krauthammer has a book, I think, All the Things That Matter. I have not read it. I plan to. Yeah, I think it's a compilation, I guess, of his essays over the years. But it's been an incredible success. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised that it's been such a success. But, I mean, it's like a number one and doing very, very well. And I think in many ways Charles Krauthammer has become the number one political analyst in the country, not just conservative, but just his whole style, the way he does things. I bet there's a lot of liberals who watch him and respect him, Bill, because he is really good.
He is very good, and he isn't a bomb thrower. He analyzes each problem. He's extremely intelligent and very well informed. I do agree with you. I think liberals even respect him. I think also he's been right on so many things, and I think on most things. And I believe he has an excellent track record. Yeah, he has become, I think, the Walter Lippmann of our time. And I think that there is really no liberal columnist today that approaches him. I'm glad the book is selling. I think that it was helped by a Fox documentary about Krauthammer's life, which was run recently, which is very, very good, by the way. I've seen it. And, yes, I think you're right.
Yeah, and also what's interesting in some of the interviews I've seen with him, he used to be a Democrat, a liberal Democrat, and he switched.
Yes.
And when they asked him why he switched, he said, "Look, I looked at the evidence. I looked at the empirical evidence. He's a doctor. He was trained as a doctor. And he looked at the evidence and said, this is not working. You know, these programs are not working. This welfare state is not working. In fact, it's having the opposite effect." So, I mean, it's interesting to have a person make a conversion because of that. Ronald Reagan made a similar conversion in the late 50s from liberalism to conservatism. Well, that's going to do it for today, Bill. As always, it's a great honor to have you on the show. I guess the 50th anniversary of John Kennedy is behind us now. And
yes.
Overall, what did you think of the way Dallas did it? I liked it. I thought it was well done.
I thought it was well done. It was handled very, very well and very tastefully. And what's interesting is you'll notice it did not become the huge event that some people predicted because, as you pointed out last week, most Americans weren't even born then. And
right.
I think now the Kennedy era will fade into memory, and this will be the last of the large commemorations.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Well, have a great day, Bill. Enjoy your trip back to New York, and give my best to your family, and we look forward to the next time.
I look forward to next week as well.
All right. Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just a quick couple of quick thoughts about sports here as we wrap up another Sunday. A couple of days ago, was the 88th or 90th birthday. We're not sure exactly whether he's 88 or whether he's 90. I guess it depends what report you read. But I'm talking about Minnie Minoso, the great baseball player, the great Cuban baseball player of the late 1950s or the 50s, actually, and a little bit into the 60s. Minnie Minoso, his real name is Orestes Minoso, was a Cuban player, a black Cuban player in the 1950s, and in many ways he was the Jackie Robinson of the black Latin players. Prior to Jackie Robinson, there had been some Cuban players in the major leagues, the white players, who did make it to the major leagues, but Minnie Minoso in the 1950s came then a lot of other great black Caribbean players from Cuba, Dominican, Venezuela, and so on. And all of those players all of those great black Latin players that we now follow in Major League Baseball, it had a lot to do with Minnie Minoso, and he was the first one. He was the one who broke, not technically the color line. Jackie Robinson did that, but certainly the Latin color line. And we remember Minnie Minoso this week as he turned 88 or 90. Again, we're not sure how old he is. I've seen reports that he's 88. I've seen reports that he's 90. I guess only Minnie really knows. But he was obviously a very consequential baseball player as well as a very consequential figure in the 1950s, breaking, opening the door for so many other Latin players who now, I mean, the game is full of them now, but it all started with Minnie Minoso back in the 50s. And one last thing, college football, what an amazing ending to that football game between Alabama and Auburn. And if you have not seen the replays, I would definitely recommend that you watch the replays, how that game ended. Literally, without time, Alabama goes to kick a field goal. They miss, and the fellow from Auburn returns the ball 100 yards. I don't think that's ever happened before, certainly not in a game of that consequence. And if you want to see an amazing football replay, just go to ESPN or maybe Google it or look into it in the Internet. I'm sure it's available in many different places. I've never seen a football game end like that before. Just absolutely incredible the way that that game ended. And for Alabama, I think that means that they may not be going to the championship game. I don't know. I don't know how the polls are going to look like after this week. But congratulations to Auburn, and congratulations to that young man who ran back that ball 109 yards. I mean, he literally used every inch of the stadium to run that ball back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thank you so much again for joining us. Thanks to Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda. I hope you're following Bill in Urgent Agenda. He does a great job with his coverage of foreign policy as well as domestic issues. And we'll talk to you the next time. Have a great Sunday. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.